Okay. Stragglers. On back to the body. Open your eyes. Now you're back safe and sound, home again. Okay. Now, Nicole, please tell us about the description of the room that you're in, who might be there and what they might have seen, and then be as detailed as you can, and then tell us what they might have seen from above your house, the kind of neighborhood you're in, and then lastly, tell us, how did you feel? Could you tell that you were getting this love and these hugs?
Okay, well, you know, I would have cleaned up a little more. I knew y'all were coming.
Yeah, well,
and you know how they say a busy office, a busy desk is a sign of genius.
You are, Marty.
So, and lots of things to see. Lots of computers, electronic equipment, microphones, phones, wires everywhere. And a bookshelf to my right, a small square office room that's closed off from, and so I'm alone. Usually I'm with a chihuahua, who is not in the room today. And she probably would have sensed you all and barked. Bookshelf, three bookshelves up to my right, full of God knows what. Pictures of me firewalking to my left. certificates from my warrior camp and peak potentials things on my wall to my left. And tons of pictures of my latest belly dance students and me on my right. Let's see.
Windows?
One window to the left. Yeah, just one small window that goes looks right straight out to the front porch. Oh, and I have my drum in here because Mandito, who had recently passed, had been drumming in my head for a couple of weeks. That's all posted on the website. Been drumming along with Mandito in here. So we have an African drum. And and an on-air sign, of course. Map of the world behind me on the wall. Map of Canada and the U.S. on the other wall. And a bunny. A stuffed bunny. Gotta have the stuffed bunny. I don't know why.
That's certainly enough evidential data that people should have seen something there. Again, you out there in the listening audience, you need to send him an email to Nicole and let her know, you know, how much of this you got right, what you saw, and even if you didn't see anything, you know, let her know what your experience was.
Feedback would be good.
Yeah, feedback is always good. Now, how did you feel? Could you feel?
Now, I felt the tingly energy coming in, and definitely felt something. Like, you know, when a presence is in the room, it felt like that.
Mm-hmm. Did it last a while? Was it, could you tell it was
almost
different?
Almost the whole time once you started.
Just the whole time, yeah. Okay, well, what did we learn about this? Well, first we learned that there is no space. If you recall, I didn't say travel to Nicole's. I just said, look at Nicole, and there we are in her room. There is no space. You don't have to travel to get where you're going. There's no, you don't have to fly, you don't have to go through magic tunnels or any of that. It's all a matter of your intent. If you intend that you are there, then your consciousness is there. This is not physical materiality. This is a place where there is no such thing as space. Okay. Now, you also should notice that people are easier than things to see. So it was probably easy for all of you to see Nicole and then to be there standing in front of her and see her with the phone. Okay, see Nicole in her room. It was a simple thing. Now, when I asked you to look around the room, that was probably harder because now you're looking at things. When you're in the non-physical, you're not really in tune with things. You're in tune with relationship. You're in tune with people. But you're not that in tune with things. It's a much harder thing to do, is to look and see the stuff. Okay, now when you got to the love and hug part, that should have been easy again, because now we're back to relationship and people. Okay,
Oh, I've got to give you my physical, the external things that they might have noticed, because we're right by freeway. We're by a freeway, a bridge, and a large river.
Uh-huh.
And then mountains.
And are you in a residential neighborhood or a business neighborhood?
It's primarily a residential, but it's a small off to itself area, kind of separate from, you know, Vancouver, Lower Mainland area. So it's a small, primarily residential area, big houses, kind of in a small area. And, you know, literally right by freeways and big bridge and a big river.
Okay, well, that would be good. Yes, if you're looking at an industrial area or a commercial area, the roofs are almost always flat. If you're looking at a residential area, the roofs are almost always peaked. So that's one giveaway there. Okay, that's good. Now, for those of you who tried to guess, like, where did you think she should have been? You know, you can imagine that she was, you know, maybe sitting behind a desk or doing something like that. And if you let that intellect get in your process, then you contaminate the process with what's inside your head rather than just getting the data that's out there. That's the hard part. You know, sometimes I get asked, well, you know, if I work on this, if I get into meditation and I really work and I do evidential data, how long will it take me before I'm really, you know, able to do these things and know what I'm doing you know, what's the timeline here? And what I tell people is it takes you about 3 to 9 months to get sufficiently proficient at meditation and about 3 to 19 years to eliminate the fear, beliefs, and ego that limit your awareness. So the mechanics of it, the meditation, the intent, that sort of thing is the easy part. The hard part is eliminating your fear, your beliefs, the ego, the intellect, to get all of that out. You have to be just a dispassionate observer. You have to have no idea what the result's going to be. You have to not care what the results are. You have to not care whether you're right or wrong. You just have to do it and observe. And if you have that attitude, you'll see that the ritual, the meditation, the process can get smaller and smaller and smaller to where you can shift your awareness to these various reality frames in a matter of seconds. You don't have to go through a long, drawn-out process. If you go through these processes, basically what you're learning in a meditation process is to set all of this noise aside, to get your ego, to get your, you know, beliefs and your intellect out of it. You're learning to blank your mind, to have none of the jabber that goes on in your head all the time. You're learning to suppress that. Well, I don't really suppress it. You're learning to get rid of it. So most of the learning and process has to do with you letting go of the things that inhibit your experience of this process. So once you learn to let that stuff go, or when you get rid of it, or if you don't ever have it, if you can just be an objective observer and don't have to be right, don't have your ego involved in it, then you can hop around between these frames almost instantly. And you can learn to parallel process in them so that you can be in several frames at once. The consciousness is a very adaptable and very amazing thing. The albatross around the neck, the thing that holds us back, is ourselves. Not that it's such a hard thing to do, but that we have so much fear and so much ego. Okay, now let's see. Let's go on. So we've learned that there's no space, that people are easier than things, and relationship is the easiest thing of all. Everybody could probably do that love and hug without any trouble at all. And that intellect just gets in the way. Analysis traps you. As soon as you start second-guessing what you think the right answer should be, you've lost it. Okay, and it's the last thing is that it's much simpler than you thought. Again, success on these things we've just done is not the issue. you may not have gotten the finger right, you may not have seen what was, you know, in Nicole's neighborhood or whatever, but you know how to go about gathering data. So go out and do it. Go places where you can check and see what was there. Heal, diagnose, and heal people where you can check to find out whether or not you were right. Just keep doing it, I'd say at least 50 times before you even start to ask the question of, is this real and am I doing anything? Just keep doing it. If you try to get too judgmental too soon, what happens is that you don't have enough experience to be judgmental. You're judging before you have enough experience to judge well. So just get the experience, collect the data, and don't judge it. Wait. Now, after you've had about 50 of these and you've done it, as you go, realize, well, those times that you were successful, how did they differ from the times that you weren't? Keep getting better at it, and it won't take you very long, 6 months or so, you'll be good at this. So that's really what this is all about, to give your audience a little experience and a way to go learn how to do this themselves, and it doesn't mean that you have to become a super-duper meditator or learn how to do chants or rituals or any other thing. All you have to do is control that ego and that fear and that intellect, and you're on your way. Okay.
Well, that's a great Tom, because
they
can go into the archives as well, right, and do these again.
Yes, they can do it, and it's just a matter of their intent. They can do everything we did tonight and more. You just have to have a clear, focused intent. And when you're in a space where you are not aware of your physical surroundings, you're there. You're outside of this reality frame. You are there, and you can call that out of body if you like, because you're not, you know, your body is a sensory thing. Your body's sensing, you know, it hears, it smells, it sees. And if you're not hearing, smelling, and seeing, but you're, you know, looking at some gingerbread cookie, turning black things white, well, you're not in this reality frame. You can say that that's out of body. That works. That's a very general definition of the term out of body. There's a more kind of classical out of body mode, but that's just another small reality frame. There's lots of different reality frames. There are thousands of different reality frames, and you have to explore each and every one of them to find it. You know, it's sort of like imagine a big library where every book that's ever been written at any time is there. I mean, they've got everything. But the way this library works is that you come in and you talk to the librarian and tell them what you want, and they go get it and bring it to you. You're never allowed to go back among the books. Well, if the only thing you know that exists in written form is, say, cheap romance novels, then that's all you ever ask for. Or if all you know exists in written form is comic books, that's all you ever ask for. So you have to pull yourself up by your bootstraps here. You have to go experience and explore. You have to go a little further each time. You can learn a little bit. They'll give you a little hint about what to ask for next. Well, I was reading this romance novel, and it said something about so-and-so, whatever. I wonder what that's about. So then you can go explore that. One thing will lead to another, and, you know, years come and go, and you will be very familiar with the larger reality. But you don't. It's not like you just jump out there and there it is. You don't explore the larger reality like you explore Central Park or the Grand Canyon. It's not like that. You're talking about data and information, and you have to interpret it in terms of metaphor. That's what the larger reality is like. That's why, you know, it gains this reputation of being so flaky. Well, it's not that it's flaky. People don't understand that the way that reality is and the nature of it. It's all interpreted metaphor and symbol. It's all personal. It's all subjective. Even this reality is subjective. We just think it's objective because we're all from the same culture and we all have the same sensory information, so we get almost the same thing. We all agree very closely on what we see because our vision is all very much the same. Now, what if some of us could only see infrared and some of us could only see ultraviolet and some of us could see visible like we do now? Well, we'd have a very hard time talking to those people, because they'd see the pipes carrying hot water in the walls if you saw infrared, but they may not even see the walls. So that's, you would just see things differently. Well, when your sensory data is different, you have very different realities. But when you're just collecting data, when it's just information, like telepathic information, what sort of, how is it that we would all see it and interpret it the same? Well, we don't. That's why so many people come back from these journeys and report different things. It's their interpretation. It's not just the way it was. They didn't just explore the non-physical Grand Canyon and are bringing you back a map. They're bringing back their interpretation of what they experienced. And that interpretation is based on their own experience set. They can only interpret in terms of what they have experienced. So if you happen to be a very religious person and you go out there and you see some great being and, helping others, then you might find it to be an angel or a saint or, some other religious figure. Whereas if you're not a religious person, you might find it to be a guru or a teacher. So you interpret things the way you see them. And then we come back and we get in fights over tools and interpretations. And, of course, that's very counterproductive. Every religion and every group has their own tools. Healers have their own tools, and, they'll get upset if you tell them that their tools aren't real. They're just things they make up to help them focus. They won't like that because to them the tools are very real. Or if you tell one religion tells another that, their beliefs aren't right, then they don't like that. They get upset. So we get very wound up around our tools and make our tools sacred instead of them just being tools. And they work better if they're individual anyway. Trying to use somebody else's tools, it's like trying to wear somebody else's clothes. It sort of fits, but not quite. And the interpretations are all personal and subjective. Well, okay, Nicole, I've talked enough. Now, back to you.
Okay. Well, I want to ask a question about that. In exploring the quote-unquote non-physical, so intent and purpose are like, without going, knowing where you're going or having an address, do you get anywhere? Do you explore anything?
Well, if you just don't have any intent to do anything, you tend to float in the void. You leave this reality, and a lot of meditators do that. Matter of fact, a lot of meditators, that's their goal. And that's kind of their end point. They want to get to a point where they are just point consciousness. Nothing exists except, like in Descartes said, just they are. They exist. They're point consciousness in the void. And they just, the Hindus have some name for that state. That's a very pleasant state. It's a very wonderful place to be. It's very invigorating, and it's very restful. And you really get in touch with your own consciousness there. But that's all you get if you don't have any intents of what you want. If you don't intend to see a gingerbread cookie and then intend that represents Dan and then intend to turn his dark spots white, then none of that happens. So, yes, you have to have intent. But, again, this is like then you at the library. What do you intend to do? Well, you're not quite sure what you can do. So you could do a whole lot of things if you knew more, but you have to. It's not that you read it in a book. You have to go explore and do it a little bit at a time. Well, now you know a few things you can do. You can get to that spot where you're not in your body, where your senses aren't any longer sending in any data that you're paying attention to, and you can diagnose, and then you can heal, and then you can go give hugs and tell people you care. Well, you also can talk to people. You can have conversations. You can go to that state. You can intend to be with a certain individual, and then you can talk to them. Parents, hey, this is a good way to get through to your teenagers. This is a good way to be helpful to people. Now, if you don't use this to be helpful, if you go to people and you try to manipulate them or try to get them to do what you want them to do, that's not good. Eventually, you will lose your ability to do that because the system is set up to evolve. And if you use it inappropriately, you're basically de-evolving the system and you will be shut out of it. So the system is self-protecting, but as long as you're trying to help, as long as you're trying to be of service and you're not leading with your ego, but you're leading with love, then you will get more and more successful and you'll learn more and more about what to do next. So yes, just go out there and intend. First, please intend to do things that are evidential. Otherwise, you will never convince yourself that you're not just making it up in your mind. So you have to do these healing things, these remote viewing. You have to do the kind of things that I just went over with you. These are the key first things to do because you can make them evidential. And after you realize that you're getting information and doing things that are paranormal, and you do it so often that it couldn't just be chance because you've done it 100 times or 1,000 times, you'll start to get confidence that what you're doing is real. You're having real effects, and you'll get good enough at it that 99% of the time you are having real effects. So you can't start in the middle. You got to start at the beginning and just pull yourself up by your bootstraps and work your way up a little bit at a time. It takes a long time to get real effective and get good. So if the first 20 times you do it, it doesn't work, just keep going. You probably are letting your intellect get in the way. Just try to do it a little better. Try to be more, more detached from the result. Don't try so hard to get it right. Just do it and see what happens, like a scientist. You shouldn't have any preconceived notions about how the experiment's going to turn out or about whether you're going to be successful or not. Just do it and see. So attitude is very important.
Okay. So.
Okay. How are we doing with time? Are we?
We are. We've got about 30 minutes to the top of the hour.
Okay. Now you had advertised teleportation, so let's do that. Why not? Yes, a long time ago, Nicole and I were having a discussion, and teleportation came up, and she said, well, Tom, have you ever done that? And I told her that, yes, one time I had tried to appear before an individual, and sure enough, that individual did see me at just that time, and they reported back very excited that they had seen me, and I had done this one time, and Nicole's never let me forget that I told her that. And she's always wanted to do a teleportation experiment. Now, this is not something I practice. It's not something that I would, claim to be good at or something. I have done it, and it is possible. Almost everything is possible when it comes to consciousness. When you say, well, what can I do? Well, you can do almost anything you want. There's very little that's impossible, but you can't do any of it just because you want to. It's not a wish thing. It's not clicking your ruby red slippers together and, wishing that you were in Kansas. That generally doesn't do it. You have to train your mind to let go of the ego and the fear and the expectations and the intellect. Well, okay, let's do a little teleportation experiment and see what happens here.
Okay.
First of all, we start with the physical reality, of course, is a virtual reality. So I want to tell a little bit about what's going on first before we try to do it. Okay, what's involved here is that Every one of us is an individuated consciousness. We are data. We are data and memory and processing in our own little space, so to say, our own little subset. And we share this data. Okay, now those of us that are in this physical reality together, we have all entered into this virtual reality game called physical matter reality or Earth universe, our universe, because we're here on Earth, but it's the whole physical universe that's involved here in this game. And that means that we are all getting data streamed into our consciousness that gives us the sense that we see and hear and smell all the things we see and hear and touch and smell. Okay, so this is virtual reality where you can imagine that data is being put into our consciousness. We're interpreting that data as this reality. Okay, so now that's the kind of fundamental thing. So we're all sharing this data stream. It's a multiplayer game. And we have rules in this game, and the rules are called our physics. Things fall down and not up. We have you know, rules that have to do with biology and rules that have to do with chemistry and physics. When I say physics, I basically mean all the, you know, all the sciences, all the rules of the matter, of the stuff. So we have these rules, and that's the rule set for the game that we're in. And if we had different rules, then, you know, we'd have different physics, and maybe we could fly, you know, or levitate or do things. But that's not our rule set. So what I need to do in order to teleport so that you see me is I need to put data into your data stream that's data of me. Okay, now there's a couple of ways we can do that. I can put data into just your head, and then maybe you would see me, but the person standing next to you would not. I can try putting data into both of your heads. I can do that in terms of your mind's eye. Okay, so you see me in your mind. If you're kind of in a gentle meditation state, you would see me. Maybe sitting with your eyes closed, you would be able to see me. Or I can do that in the physical eye. Now, what do we mean by physical eye? I just said there is no physical eye, right? Nothing's physical. So what we interpret as having come through our physical eyes is what comes through that data stream that I was telling you about that defines our physical reality. So it's not enough just to communicate to you and teleport to you in your mind's eye or in a way that you perceive with your intuition or your consciousness, but I have to basically hack into the data stream that's defining your physical reality and become part of that data stream. Now, that's a much more narrowly defined data stream than just what's available to your consciousness in general. Okay, and I would have to do that such that to be consistent, then everybody that was there would have to see the same thing. Okay, now, how easy and how hard is that? Well, each of us filter out what is not supposed to be part of our physical reality. We're in this physical matter multiplayer, you know, game with its physics as the rule set. And in order to make this game effective, we can't have all this other stuff going on too. We can't be, you know, seeing other reality frames and other worlds and all of this going on at the same time would be very confusing. To make this an effective multiplayer game, and why are we in this game? Why did we join this game? Because this is a learning laboratory. Our physical reality is a place to learn. This is a place where you get immediate feedback, where you make decisions and you see what happens. When you're just consciousness sharing data, it's much more difficult to get traction on the effects that you're having, on what, you know, the ramifications of your choices are a lot harder to determine. You go into this tightly constrained physical matter reality with its rule set, and everything is very simple and straightforward. Everything's connected. You do something, there's a result. You make decisions, you make choices, there are results, and the results are immediate. You get feedback. So we come here to learn. This is a learning laboratory. But in order to make this learning laboratory valuable, we have to shut out all the rest of that stuff. So we all have filters on our consciousness. Once we join this physical matter reality learning lab, we have filters that filter out everything else. And that's part of why it's so hard for people to go explore the larger reality system, because we're not really designed to do that. We can do that, and you can learn to do it if you learn to control your mind, but that's not really the point of our being here. You have to learn to get in that quiet, still mind frame where you are, where you have no fear, where you are just experiencing and observing without an intellect. And that's very hard for us to do because we live through our intellects here. We are our intellects, and that's why it's hard for us to do. So I not only have to hack into this particular data stream, but I have to do that and get through your basic filters that filter out everything but this data stream. So it's not necessarily an easy thing to do, but it's something that can be done, and something that I have done once before many years ago. And I don't mind trying or doing experiments because that's part of the fun of it. I mean, this is an adventure. You have to see this not as a zero sum game that, you know, if you learn this, now you're different and you're over here. It's an adventure. You explore, you do things, you do experiments. Some of the experiments don't work out the way you intend. Sometimes you learn things that are more valuable than what you intended to learn. Sometimes you learn that things don't work. That's okay. The failure, the fear of failure inhibits a lot of people because they don't want to look around your room and see, you know, a big grandfather clock and then find out there isn't one there. So they've got this fear that they're doing it wrong. And the fear of being wrong makes them second guess everything. They say, well, I just saw a bookcase, but am I right? Maybe that's not a bookcase. Maybe I just imagined that bookcase. And then they just get all wadded up in the intellectual thing. They just need to look. If they see a bookcase, they see a bookcase, note it and go on. You see, that's the difference. So having a fear of failure, having a need to succeed are part of the problems. You just have to do it and let happen whatever happens. You learn from the failures as well as you learn from the successes. The failures tell you how not to do it next time. The successes tell you how to do it next time. So anyway, that's kind of what's going on. And the bottom line here is that this is not something if I am successful at this, which is probably a long shot because it's not something I practice, but I certainly won't let that inhibit my effort. It's not something that I'm going to do to you, Nicole, by showing up there or to, you know, whoever else might be there. It's not something I'm going to do to the people there, like force them to see my image. That's not the thing. It's something we have to do together. In other words, I have to project into your data stream, but you have to receive the data and interpret it. You see? So it's not just something that kind of I do to you, but it's a shared thing. You have to get that data and you have to interpret it. Now we get lots and lots of data that we ignore, that we don't interpret. That's our filter. And that's just the way we are. That maintains the integrity of our physical learning laboratory here. Okay, so what are we going to do here? Also, I guess there's another thing. The intellect gets in the way when we try too hard, and that goes with the healing and the diagnosing as well as everything else. If you're trying really hard to see something, you make it very difficult to see it because now your intellect is involved in the act of trying. If you try, then your intellect's involved. If your intellect's involved, you're not likely to succeed. So it's like do without trying. And that sounds like it's, you know, it's an impossible thing, but it isn't. So it would be easier if you and I were sitting here and this just happened to you and you weren't trying. You know, the act of trying inhibits success. But then again, that's just another one of these little things we have to do. That's why I say it's partly you, it's partly me. There also is a thing called the psi uncertainty principle. The psi uncertainty principle is sort of like that filter I was talking about. It's a principle that says there must be a certain amount of uncertainty surrounding any psi event in order to maintain the integrity of this learning lab. Otherwise, it would kind of ruin the physical experience here. We would, you know, it would blend the non-physical and the physical together, and that makes our learning lab not as good as it is. We need it to be very much the way it is, just to optimize our learning. So there's lots of issues besides just, you know, it's not like, you know, you go and explore the Grand Canyon. It's not that simple. This is consciousness, it's shared, it's about communication, and it's about data. Okay, so let's get started. And I can do some of this while I talk because I will just split my consciousness in two, and I'll have part of it doing one thing and part of it will be sitting here talking to you. So we'll
okay, and I'm going to, like I mentioned to you when we talked about doing this, I'm going to use my you know, my training as a remote viewer is about letting go of the outcome and, you know, not going into judgment
right.
and intellect as much as possible. I've also got that theta brainwave thing. Should I put that on to help me get in the right state, or?
Well, that would, yeah, if you want to do that, that might be good.
Okay.
That would get you,
give me a second
you,
to do that. I'm
going to
put you on. Sorry, hang on. Just stand by 2 seconds, Tom.
Okay.
Can you still hear me, Tom?
Yeah, I can hear you. A little off in the distance, but I can hear you.
Okay, I'm just going to put the brainwave thing on now.
Okay, what happens is that when you put on a, when you get your brainwaves in a theta state, basically that means that your consciousness is in a very receptive state. So that just makes you more receptive. We've talked about the filter and the fact that this has to be something we do together, but it's that just helps you get in a more receptive frame of mind. So that is probably a handy thing to do. Okay, you can tell me when you're ready.
Okay, we're good to go on this end.
Okay. And the listening audience, note that Michelle said that she was going to do her remote viewing thing, and that remote viewing thing basically is protocols and ways of doing all the things we just talked about, getting your intellect out of it, not having any preconceived notions, not second-guessing the results. That's the, you know, remote viewers have protocols to prevent them from doing those things. Well,
did you just call me Michelle?
Did I?
I got to tell you something interesting, Tom. Carrie O'Connor does that with me a lot, too. A lot of the intuitive people that come on the show, I have a missing twin, and I think that must be her name. Either that or I'm just changing my name to Michelle, because it's always Michelle. People call me Michelle. I don't know why.
Michelle.
Interesting.
Well, I may have. I didn't notice. Well, I'll try to say Nicole from now on. Yeah, write this down on a big... Not Michelle. Well, I have a daughter named Michelle. I don't know that I have anything to do with it, but Michelle does seem very natural for you.
It's so interesting. Maybe I'll just go out and change it.
Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to try to project an image, just an image of my head. We'll just start with that. And if you have other, I don't know if you do, but if you have other people there in your room now, hopefully those are people that don't know what I look like. If there are, then there may be some evidence if they can describe, you know, what I do look like. Because you have seen a picture of me, because I sent a picture that's on your website, and you do have an idea of what my head would look like. So I'm going to project this image, and I'm going to try to put it in your mind's eye to begin with. Okay, and I'm going to slow my talk down a little bit because I can't talk quite that much and work both at the same time. So give me just a few moments. Sort of like the Cheshire Cat. All you see is the grin, right? Okay, so there you should have that. I'm doing that now as I speak. I have an image of my head kind of teleported to you, your mind's eye. You should be able to see that. And if there's anybody else in the room, I'm going to try to do the same thing with them. You didn't indicate earlier that there was anybody in the room, but...
No.
My
cat has entered the room, though, so
well, I'll try to,
feel free.
I'll try to show up to your cat, too, then.
You should enjoy that.
Okay, now, I'm going to try to shift that data, now that I have a data connection and I'm putting the data of my image into your data stream, but it's in your larger consciousness data stream, and if you are just kind of relaxed and looking, you should see me, you should see my head, see my face. kind of feel my presence, that I am there. And the next step will be to take, to try to take that and shift it into the data stream that also defines your physical. And I'm going to go to try to do that now and see if then you should be able to see me with your eyes open as well.
Okay.
Okay, I suspect that's enough of that. Your listeners can only stand so much silence.
Yes. It's interesting. I'm trying to not try to see. And in when we were doing the paranormal investigations, you know when you see heat on a road way down
right.
the road far in front of you?
Exactly.
Where it's, mm-hmm. Yeah. I could see a bit of molecular energy that, and it looks like that, but it's like molecules moving fast or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would suspect that if you saw with your eyes open, that you would have seen kind of a ghosty, kind of a shimmery disturbance, and hopefully you would have had some sense that that was me by the visual appearance of it, but it was. I wouldn't expect you to be like I was standing in your room. You know, that would be unlikely. But that you would see some sort of a chimera. Or I don't know what it's called. You know what I mean? Kind of a ghostly figure would be probably what you see. What I was trying to put into your room was light. So I wanted to appear not as solid, but I wanted to appear as a light being, as light form. So that was,
well, it'll be interesting to see. I had some cameras rolling as well during that time that we were focusing there. I could see a shimmer with my eyes, like what I was describing to you. So it'll be interesting to see if something... Would that pick up on a camera's eye as well?
It may as well. If I get into the data, if my data gets into the data stream that is your physical reality, then the consistency of the physics there would make it show up on the film as well. Yeah, once you're there, you're there. Now, if I'm just in your mind's eye, cameras wouldn't see anything. So there's two different data streams coming to you. One's kind of the larger consciousness, and the other is your focus in the physical. So the camera would see the one that was just the physical data stream. It would not see the one that's in your larger consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there may. Your camera may see that same shimmer. It may get the same kind of a shimmery thing. I tried to put enough light in it that you would be able to visibly see the shape. It should have been, you know, taller than it was wide. Hopefully that describes me, that I'm taller than I am wide. And there should have been some disturbance in the air, disturbance in light. I guess when you actually see a shimmer, what you're seeing is shades of light. Some parts are a little lighter than other, and you're seeing varying shades of lightness. But, if the cameras catch that, then that would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, it is a great exercise to do.
Yeah, we finally done it. Huh? You've been wanting to do this for a long time. We finally done it.
Well, it's exciting because people can revisit this in the archive, too. And I mean, not so much the teleportation experiment, but all of these other things that they can practice and develop those muscles, you know, and set it up where they've got feedback that they can determine, yes, that was...
Right, and like I say, if it doesn't work the first time, you know, don't say, well, it doesn't work for me. That's not the thing. These things are subtle differences in your consciousness. It's subtle awareness, and you have to develop a sensitivity to it. So you have, that's why I say, do it at least 50 times, and it's not that hard. Just somebody you work with, ask them if they know somebody, and not the, you know, somebody that you don't know. You know, maybe it's their mother or their Aunt Susie or somebody that they know who has some kind of some kind of a clear medical issue. You know, if it's somebody who just has trouble sleeping, well, you know, that's not something that's necessarily easy to see in a black and white contrast. But if they have a broken leg or they have a tumor or they have, tuberculosis or they have, you know, some other kind of thing, those are things that should definitely show up in this black and white contrast that we're doing. And just do it. Don't expect anything. Just do it and see what happens. And then do it again and do it again. And by the time you're done with 50, my guess is you're going to be at about the 60 or 70% level of getting it right, because you will have learned doing those 50 how to approach it. You'll be picking up on subtle differences. Like you say, you'll be flexing and strengthening those muscles that allow you to understand at a subtle and intuitive level just exactly what you're doing. Well, I hope I didn't dominate this too much. I thought we'd get your listeners involved and give them a little something to do and a way to progress, because, you know, the problem is most people say, oh, it's just too hard, you know. I'm not good at it. I've tried meditating. I'm not very good at it. And that's because they have this idea of what good at it means. They think, oh, to be good at it, you have to, you know, feel like this and feel like that. It's got to be deep, and you have to feel deep and heavy, and I didn't feel deep and heavy. It doesn't need to feel any of those things. They didn't feel deep and heavy when they were looking at that gingerbread cookie. You just have to shift the focus of your consciousness.
Yeah, and so, it was good stuff. Like I said, it was, and I loved the hugs personally. That was my favorite part. But, you know, they can practice this and work on it.
Yeah, well, tell us what you saw. Did you follow along and do the gingerbread man and look at Dan? Did you see a black spot on his finger, or did you not?
I did. I was getting arm. I was on the left side. That's why I was curious as to which finger it was. So. But, yeah, it was I didn't see a change either from the first one or the second one, so I felt like I was somewhat there. I've been a lot of practice, a little rusty on my remote viewing stuff too, so I'm still working on getting that show going, the remote viewing show, so we'll do targets and we'll do, you know, debriefings live on the air so we can go through the data and see what it looks like to follow through on actual remote viewing tasking, so that's going to be exciting too.
Like everything else, it's practice, practice, practice. You know, if you were learning to play a violin, you know, I mean, you can get some instruction, but basically to get good at it, you just have to do it, and you kind of get better, you know, by osmosis. Just by doing it is how you get better. You can't just, you know, sit down and read 100 books on playing the violin and get up to play one. It doesn't work that way. This is like that, too. You have to get personally involved, and you just practice and practice, and you get better and better. You know, you get more precise and more discriminating as you go. So, yeah, listeners out there, you can do this. It's your right. It's you are consciousness, and you can tap into the consciousness grid. You are tapped into it. You just filter it out most of the time. So, yeah, these things are not as hard as they appear to be, and most of what makes them hard are your beliefs and expectations.
And it's the difference that you pointed out between these things, you know, random occurrences of paranormal activity versus trying to make something happen. That's a whole different game where you really got to employ all this practicing and getting the mind out of the way and develop all these skills, isn't it? It's quite a different thing.
Exactly. If you're going to make something happen, then that's an entirely different thing altogether. Although the more subtle it is that you make happen, like the healing, you know, if you heal something, now you can kind of make that happen. See, that's a subtle thing. That person gets better. But it's not like, you know, there was a big flash of light and cloud of smoke someplace that a bunch of people were looking at. And then you don't have problems with this psi uncertainty principle. So those things that tend to be subtle are the things that are easiest to do. You can have conversations with people, and you will be surprised at how suddenly they got all that information. They got it. Now, how did they get it? They didn't hear you talking to them. They got it as part of their own intuition. Maybe they heard a voice, probably not. What they hear is that suddenly the ideas and the notions and the things that you were telling them kind of seem intuitively there. It's like it's part of their mind. So those things are much easier to do than it is to hack into somebody's data stream and get into the physical data stream. And the point is, why do you want to do that? You know, there's no real reason to do those things. There's no real reason to know whether it was on the right hand or the left hand. You've diagnosed, you've healed. What difference does it make if it's on the right or the left hand? All these details are good for is in the beginning evidential data. You need evidence. So then, yes, do the right hand, left hand thing. Get your evidence. But eventually, you don't do any of that stuff. You don't want to teleport. You don't care if it's right hand or left hand because you're just trying to be helpful. And whether it's right or left doesn't help you be helpful at all. So it kind of changes. The more you get into it, the less you worry over details.
Well, this is wonderful. You've given everybody a great start. And have I ever told you my teleporting story, Tom?
Let me guess. Was this when you were a child and you had glasses on and you appeared in
another
room?
Okay, good. It's in the archives. I just wanted to make sure that was out there somewhere.
Yeah.
And
I did say that.
Yeah.
Things do happen.
Mm-hmm. And that's what drives us to, you know, on this path of discovery, isn't it? Because we know that we're not just this 3D lack and limitation, you know, nothing's possible, right? So if anybody hasn't heard that, I want to invite you to revisit all of the, just go to Google and put Tom Campbell on News for the Soul, and you'll find all of his shows that he's done with us. And that's the quickest way right now until we get our high-tech, easily searchable, cutting-edge, you know, 20th century website, which we're still in the works on. But hopefully soon we'll get that going. But this is a great start and a great exercise for everybody to practice this. Practice every day if you want. And I want emails. I want to know what you saw in my office, in my studio. And
How many saw the river? How many saw the bridge?
Mm-hmm.
How many saw the bookcases? And, again, seeing things is not as easy as connecting with people. And I'm sure they found that out, that to give you the hug and the love and to see you and to be standing in front of you, that's easy. You know, looking around at things is a little less easy, but you can still do it. You just need a little more focus.
And, you know, there was a lot of things here that I didn't mention that they could have seen. So just send me an email and let's see how well you did. And that was a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Tom, for being here today and doing this great service on News for the Soul.
Well, you're quite welcome. It's my pleasure. It's been a lot of fun.
Anytime. And I'm going to be calling you when we get our remote viewing going to get you in on that. That'd be great.
Okay.
And do you have any events coming up shortly that you want to let anybody know about?
I don't have any workshops that are real short. The next one's going to be, that I know for sure, is going to be in London in probably around October, sometime in early fall, I believe. And like I say, there may be one in Canada. And if you want to be a part of that, you can go to the web. And, gee, I wish I had that address. Well, you can go to my site, which is www.mybigtoe, all one word, mybigtoe.com. If you go to that site, I will have a site up there very shortly that's put up just to produce events where I come and do workshops or give seminars or lectures or something. If you're interested in me doing that in your area, we'll just get to that website, and I'll have it posted on my site soon. And
okay, wonderful.
Involved.
Excellent. Well, we're right at the top of the hour, so I'm going to get a couple of things in here at the top of the hour before the system cuts us off. But thank you so much, Tom, for being here, and let's do it again soon. And all the best with everything you do. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Nicole, for having me. It's been a lot of fun. I hope it made a difference. and is helpful to some of your listeners.
Always a pleasure. MyBigToe.com, that's Tom's website. And again, thanks to our sponsor of today, BeyondTechniques.net. Time to remove those training wheels, fully aligned with the 2012 shift, get Beyond Techniques, the 2012 shift evolving from light worker to the light, by Lisa Marie Gutowski. It's a perfect resource for moving from doing to being, and a unique book, Beyond Techniques, empowers seekers through this human conscious evolution by easing their way past the ego, erasing subconscious scripts, and moving into full source connection. So go check them out, beyondtechniques.net. And that's kind of what it's all about, all these exercises, and it really is connecting in a deeper way what our true reality is. Oh, and the giveaway for today is, let's see who's getting the package today. We're going to be sending a gift out right now to Mary at, she's from West Point, Texas. Mary, congratulations, and we'll see you guys tomorrow. We're back here with another amazing hour, I think. Yes, we are. No, we're not. Yes, we are at 4 o'clock tomorrow, John Asraf from The Secret. First time on News for the Soul. We look forward to that. And we will see you all here then. Have a good one, everybody.